On EWTN Global Catholic Radio, you'll hear a wide variety of speakers discussing a multitude of topics, from atheism to zeal. But what are the fundamental realities that often lie hidden beneath these topics? Well, Father Thomas Dubé uncovers these very foundations on the program Bedrock Basics. Now here's Father Dubé.
Welcome to this week's edition of Bedrock Basics. I'm Father Thomas Dubé, and this week we're going to take up a subject that will probably extend us into next week as well. And I want to give you a little outline of where we're going because it will set a context and make it a little bit easier for you to grasp. Not that the subject matter is difficult, it is not difficult at all, but it's good to see some things in a context. I'm going to call, in a popular kind of sense, what we do this week and again take up next week, taking myself in hand. Myself refers to every one of us. Taking ourselves in hand. And there are four things we're going to talk about here. We're going to talk about degrees of conversion. Notice the whole series has been subjects that are rock bottom. They're really basically important in our human situation, but they're seldom talked about. Those are the ones I want to deal with. And the degrees of conversion are almost never talked about, and we will. There are three degrees of conversion, not just one. And then we're going to talk a bit about the first degree with a literary masterpiece to guide us, the parable of the prodigal son. It is a literary gem. Then, thirdly, we're going to analyze the extraordinary resistance that you and I have, human beings, until we're touched deeply by God and say yes, He wants to touch us all deeply, we resist changing from that first degree to the second, and from the second to the third. And we'll describe these degrees first, and we'll do that shortly. But we offer tremendous resistance to that. Not that we sit down and say, I'm not going to get better. But there are all kinds of reasons why we don't. And then the fourth thing, and oh yes, in that third section, we're going to talk about what do we do about the resistance we bring to changing our lives to the very lofty summit of holiness. We'll talk about practical items of how do we get over that resistance and how do we grow. Then our fourth area in this section, which is rather on the longer side, as you notice, I'm going to call lighting a fire in my heart, your heart as well. And the heart here means our inner life and our will, particularly lighting a fire, because these degrees of conversion do not happen, especially second and third, unless there's a fire inside. And how do we light the fire? I'm not going to be talking about a deep prayer life. I've said so much about that in other series. I've mentioned it even in this one, but that's at the heart of the matter. But there's some other things we need to do to light the fire. Now that brings us then to our first item of business, the degrees of conversion. Most people, when they hear conversion, think of changing from either atheism to the church or one religion to another. And that is a valid use of the term. However, that is not what we're talking about in this series and this program. We are talking about moral conversion, spiritual conversion of our approaching God. And there are three degrees of it. The first degree of conversion is from serious alienation from God. Mortal sin is the term we usually attach to that conversion. From mortal sin to the state of grace. That conversion is the first degree. And that is pretty often spoken about. Maybe not in that exact terminology I'm using right now, but it's pretty often spoken about, and I'm not going to say much about that. I want to talk about things we don't talk about very much, seldom, almost never. But just to wrap that one up. So the first degree of conversion is found in a person who has said previously, Lord, I don't want you. Doesn't use those terms most likely, but in action, I want my idol. Whether it's money or lust or vanity or power, that's what I want, and I offend you seriously about any one of these or all of them together, and that's what I'm after, my idols. That is alienation from God. And to change from that 180 degrees, Lord, I give up my idols, I want you. That's the first degree of conversion. Now, the second degree of conversion is the change from deliberate venial sin. That's not a complete alienation. It's offending God in small matters. A change from that to renouncing deliberate venial sins. Lord, I shall get over the things wrong with me. Even though I'm still in your basic friendship, state of grace, we call that. I'm still in your friendship, but I don't bother much about offending you in minor matters. And the conversion is when I give up those venial offenses and I'm going to correct them. For example, gossiping about people's faults. Unless it's something very serious, ordinarily it wouldn't be a mortal sin. But it's a venial sin. And the one who's converted says, Lord, I'm going to stop this. Not simply I kind of am sorry about it and all the rest, but I'm going to give it up. So that this person, when converted, really works at unkind speech about other people. Gives it up. Another example would be overeating. Ordinarily, it's not a mortal sin to eat too much, to gain some weight. Usually it wouldn't be mortal. But in any event, the person who converts here says, not simply, I should be better about what I eat and what I drink and all the rest, I know that, but never gets around to changing. It just doesn't. There are, as you know, with gossip, for example, with overeating, with impatience, showing impatience, not simply the feeling annoyance, that's not a sin, can't help our feelings to some extent. What I do about it with my will, I can help. And if one shows annoyance in unreasonable ways, that's a venial sin. And there are people who have these faults in their teens, in their 20s, their 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, and never get over them. That's part of what I'm going to talk about when I say resistance to the change from second and third degrees of conversion. It's extremely difficult for us to do that. But anyhow, that second degree of conversion is where a person renounces and takes the steps to correct these smaller faults and defects. There are lots of other ones that could be used as examples, and every one of us could offer illustrations. Now, the third degree of conversion, you almost never hear about, at least not from a Sunday pulpit. I don't think I've ever heard about it, unless maybe I said something about it someday or other. But it's rare, and the gospel is full of it. Namely, the third degree of conversion is from the second degree. The first two have to happen first, naturally. Renounce mortal sin, renounce deliberate venial sin, and the third degree is to go even beyond avoiding sin and doing heroically holy things that are not a commandment of any type. That example I gave you several programs ago of that woman who won the lottery and she gave all of it away, $11.8 million, to other people. There's no commandment I know of that says that you must give everything away. But she did. Now, again, as I said when we took that up, I'm not canonizing this woman, but boy, I'd like to be in her boots, you see, when I give my final accounting one day. As the Lord's going to ask us, as long as you did it to one of the least of my brethren, you did it to me. Did you really love your neighbor? Well, boy, she's doing great on that score. In any event, the conversion to the third degree is the conversion to heroic holiness. We call it in theology heroic virtue. It's a kind of goodness that has several traits. We can't really go into that here because there's a whole theology of it. Namely, traits that are beyond our human capacity. We can't do it. For example, a martyr loving his torturers and praying for them, like Stephen did. Well, like the Lord himself on the cross. This is heroic virtue. I know myself well enough to know I cannot do that. And I'm pretty sure if you take a look at yourself, you know you cannot do it either. We call that a moral miracle. When one lives heroically well, not simply one action. That's one of the traits of heroic virtue. It has to be the habitual way the person operates, and rapidly, and with joy, and with ease, and so on. That's heroic virtue. And when a person gets to that level of holiness, they have got what we call and have attained the third degree of holiness, conversion. Now, that's what we mean by conversion and its levels. We're going to go now to our second point, proceed on with it, and take up that first degree of conversion with this magnificent masterpiece, literary and theological masterpiece, The Parable of the Prodigal Son, and take a good look at it. It's got the handwriting, the divine handwriting, all over it. It could only come from the heart of God, which is the heart of Jesus himself. The main point of the parable, I think, is not only the prodigal son. We've got millions of prodigal sons and daughters. It's the loving father. And I want to point that out especially. All of us need conversion. If not to the first degree, if we're in the state of grace, let's hope we are. If we're not in that second degree of deliberate venial sin and haven't converted away from that, let's hope we have done that. We've all got to be converted, at least still more, to the heroic holiness. Now, let's look at this masterpiece. You know it so well, I'm not going to read it to you. I'm just going to pick out some particular points that need comment. So this young son of a most loving father asks for his share of the inheritance. I guess that's half the property. And he squanders his money on a life of debauchery, on prostitutes in plain English. Now, he goes through the money that may have taken a year or two or three, I don't know, and he has nothing. And so he goes to feed the pigs on the farm, and he has nothing to eat. And no one, it's so interesting, there are all kinds of little signs of divinity in this parable. No one offered him anything. Typical of the worldly world. When the world doesn't have what you give it and what it's interested in, just leaves you flat. Okay. No one gave him anything. The young man comes to his senses, notes that he's dying of hunger. Nobody attends to him. That's the world, you know, the worldly world. Then he makes up his mind, and here's his point of conversion. I will leave this place and go to my father. Notice, there are two moments, two elements in conversion. Leaving the sin, in this case, serious mortal sin, that's the first element. You've got to give up the thing and then go to the father. You just don't have one, you go to the father. Complete 180 degree reversal. That's the first degree of conversion. Now, verse 20, and this just is divine. While he, the prodigal, was still a long way off, his father saw him and was moved with pity. I would have to admit that if I had been in the father's shoes, I would have been moved to the woodshed. Just whack this kid until he comes to his senses. I hope I'm changed by now. But anyhow, that would have been my movement. The father here is moved with pity. Amazing. Of course, it is true that the son came to his senses. If he had not come to his senses, the father would have the obligation in love to admonish him and straighten him out. The father ran to the boy. The greater runs to the lesser and the offender. That's remarkable. Clasped him in his arms and kissed him tenderly. That is the end of the correction. You might say that is not even a correction. He just smothers the kid with love. Not a word of reproach. Let's look at that verse again. It is remarkable. It couldn't come from any ordinary writer. Nobody has written a sentence like that in the history of literature or philosophy or anything else. It has to come from the heart of God. While the youngster, the sinner, was a long way off, his father saw him. Notice the touch there. The Lord portrays the father as still so loving the son that in the midst of his work, even a year or two or three, that in the midst of the father's work, He still has his eyes on the horizon, looking for the sun to return. He loves the sun that much, even though the sun is wasting his money with prostitutes. That is divine. That is real love. That's what we were talking about last week. This is what love means. Okay. He ran to the boy. Didn't simply walk. Didn't call him in on the carpet, as the expression goes, you know, call somebody in the carpet. You're in trouble when that happens. Oh, no, this father doesn't put dignity at all before him and his son. He ran to the boy, clasped him in his arms, and kissed him tenderly. A tender hug and a kiss. Again, that is divine. Now, then the father says, we're going to celebrate. You know this so well. Quick, bring the best robe and put it on him, a ring on his finger, sandals on his feet. Bring the calf we have been fattening. We are going to have a feast. We are going to celebrate. And so they began to celebrate. Now enters the elder brother. And this is most instructive also. So the elder brother is coming in from the fields. He's been working out there. And he hears the dancing and the music. And he calls one of the servants and says, what's going on in the house? All this dancing and this music. And he found out, the servant told him. And here is the elder son's reaction. He was angry and refused to go in. He's pouting. How typical of some people. You'd think he'd be rejoicing that his brother has come back safe. Nope, he's going to pout. And his father, I'm reading, citing now, his father came out to plead with him. Notice that loving father. I would have been tempted, I hope I'm changed now again, but I would have been tempted to just whack this kid, this elder son, complaining about the son coming back and we're celebrating. The father doesn't complain at all. He pleads with him. Namely, come in, love your brother, and so on. But he answered his father, look, all these years I have slaved for you. Notice how somebody pouting exaggerates. I doubt he was slaving. But anyhow, he puts it strongly. I have slaved for you and never once disobeyed your orders. I have trouble believing that. Yet you never offered me as much as a kid goat for me to celebrate with my friends. So notice, all the elder son, again, egocentric. He thinks about himself, and he's pouting, and I'm not treated that way, and oh, he's all kinds of grudges. And then he's not finished, this elder son. So you haven't given me anything to celebrate like this. But as for this son of yours, notice, there's another divine touch there. The elder son doesn't want to admit that his brother is his brother. So he says, this son of yours, almost implying that the father's guilty a little bit too for this son. This son of yours, when he comes back after swallowing up your property, he and his women, you kill the calf we have been fattening. The elder son is one who does not practice what we were talking about last week, a genuine love for others, not even his own brother. And so, on an occasion where he should have been rejoicing profoundly, he's regretting and complaining and pouting about it. The father again shows the divine heart of the Lord who told us this parable. And so the father says to this elder son, my son, notice how he acknowledges that he's my son too. Both of them are his sons. That's the way the father loves you and me. Even though we are sinners, let's hope it's not mortal sin, but even so, if there's real repentance, the father is just most happy to have us back. If it's venial sin, most happy that we have converted to that degree. If it's conversion to heroic virtue, happy still. And tremendously because of that saintliness, that heroic virtue, is. The father therefore says to the elder son, my son, you are with me always, and all I have is yours. But it was only right that we should celebrate and rejoice. Your brother was here, your brother here was dead, and he has come to life. He was lost, and he is found. That parable, as I mentioned at the outset of it, is a literary masterpiece. I'm quite positive I could not find a wasted word in it. And if anybody has done any writing, you find out that it is very hard to be brief, clear, with impact, and attractive style, and so on. It's practically impossible unless one is a literary genius of a type. But this one is brilliant, not only because it's a literary masterpiece, but because of the content, and especially because of the content. Let me note one other little thing here about this conversion from serious alienation from God, as the prodigal was, to the state of grace. Notice when this prodigal comes to his senses, and there is not going to be conversion until we come to our senses about the matter that we're holding back, about our egocentrism. When he comes to his senses, he makes that remark. I called it two moments. That's a way of speaking of two elements in a thing. It's not a temporal sequence envisioned there, but two elements. He says, I will leave this place and go to my father. Now, I'd like to add to what we already said about that element in the conversion. There is no place else to go except to the Father. The world is not the answer. If anybody is in serious sin, you're not going to get an answer from the world. Because when the world has from you what it wants, it just leaves you flat, precisely as the parable indicates. There's no place to go except to the Father. Now, I should like, therefore, to conclude by going over our degrees of conversion and seeing them in the light of this literary masterpiece. The first degree, as we've said, from serious no to God to a basic yes, from serious alienation to I want you, Lord, as my center of gravity. Even though if it's only that degree of conversion, there's a long way to go yet. We'll talk about that next time. But there is a change and a going back to the Father. And what we will be doing next time, at least part of what we will be doing next time, is to look at that second degree of conversion and what it implies, that giving up of deliberate venial sin, the overeating, the snapping at people, knowingly, willingly snapping at people, different selfishnesses, being glued to TV, wasting a lot of time, even sometimes questionable TV, maybe not seriously wrong, but giving that up, or any one of these other examples that I can think of, and there are lots of them, that have to be given up in the second degree, we're going to be talking about the resistance that we place before that conversion. Not that it's deliberate, not that we want it to be that way. Probably we're ashamed of it. But we never get around to making up our mind to do something about it. And so we're going to be saying something about that next week, quite a bit about that. And also we're going to say, what do we do about the situation to get that change, that conversion, to happen? And then we hopefully will get to next week. I'm not sure we will, but we'll at least probably will. And if not, then the following week, we'll get to the third degree of conversion, namely to that magnificent holiness that we see portrayed on the cross and in the lives of the saints. Let me return to one more example of that degree that I mentioned earlier, three, four segments ago perhaps, the curé of Ars, St. John Vianney, his devotion and love for others, spending up to 16, 18 hours a day confined in the little box. That's the way the confessional was built then, a kind of small area in the dark, 16, 18 hours a day hearing the dark side of the human situation. Even if one were in a very comfortable chair, to sit that length of time is very hard to do. I traveled nonstop by jet from San Francisco to Hong Kong once, and that is painful, 14 hours, just to sit there. And he sat longer than that, listening to the dark side over and over again, counseling, loving. That is heroic virtue. That we want to also take a good look at next time. What it implies, what it is like, how do we get to that point, and what has to happen in our life if we are going to get to the point of giving absolutely everything, even when there is no precept about it. Like that woman with the lottery and what she did with what she got, $11 million plus dollars. So that next week, we're going to take a look at these last two conversions and how they are going to happen in our lives. Because I take it for granted that each one of us wants to go all the way in returning to the Father. Thank you. See you next week.